This episode of Blue Shirts Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans out there. Go to patreon.com/blueshirtsbreakaway. Here are BSBOT episodes and a bunch of other fun stuff. Thank you so much for supporting it and what make this podcast go. On today's episode, we have Travis Yost from TSN. Before that, we start off with about a 10-minute story from Gregory about his weekend at a bachelor party at a bar in Austin, Texas. And then from there, it's all Rangers. Trade talk, who gets traded, who doesn't, who gets up in the rafters, a bunch of five-star questions. Is Igor a hard candidate? Who's the trade deadline? What about the playoffs? Everything you could ever want from the number one New York Ranger podcast. But first, a lot of talk about an arcade game that results in some sort of paraphernalia. Very fun. So Greg will be doing that for about 10 minutes. We'll go right into the show after that. Well, the show starts when the show starts, which is the second, 10 seconds from now after like that with the music. You totally understand. This is a rant. Okay. Anyway, let's get to it. Here's Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Blue Shirt Breakaway fans, welcome to the week of the Blue Shirt Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead of Patreon.com, where you can support the show, and I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan, off a wonderful adventure. Gregory, say hello.
Sit down.
I'm sitting.
I have a story.
You know I'm always sitting.
Well, need to make sure this time.
You teased this, in case you're wondering, on the Twitter.com, I heard.
Sure did. The story has everything you want. Drunk people, sex toys.
Yes.
And more drunk people.
Cool. I will tell everybody, this is the number one New York Rangers podcast, and we will be getting to all of that. We have a great guest in Travis Yost, but first, Greg Kaplan. Greg.
So it was a buddy of mine's bachelor party in Austin, Texas. Everybody understood the good time I was having Thursday. I'm going to preface this story about Friday by saying I got so fucked up on Friday that I forgot Thursday happened.
In case, for people that aren't Patreon members, there's a BSBOT we did with Greg, and he's recording live from a hot tub. You can fill in the rest. Keep going.
Friday, we went out fairly early, got a very good barbecue lunch, started our drinking early, having a great time. Half of us took a break around 4 o'clock to go back to said hot tub at the house, do some home drinking while getting a good soak in before we go back out. Now, the part of this story that's going to shock you, Ryan, is I was in the half that went back to the house. So
that does shock me.
I was half of the responsible party. Now, if people have gone out to bars in the Northeast, you'll see more times than not that there's like a constant theme about specific arcade games in bars in the Northeast. Buck Hunter and Golden Tee. Those are the big two, right? More times than not, if you're at a bar that would have an arcade of any variety, you're going to see a golf game, you're going to see a shooting game, which is funny because it's Northeast. In Texas, every bar we were in had one of those measure the strength of your punch machines.
Which, by the way, I've never really seen in East Coast bars. Period.
We had one in college, but it was only their junior year. And I don't remember you going out junior year, so I'm pretty sure you
never saw it.
Didn't
drink until I was 21, so there you go.
Yep, you're a bitch. Anyway, so the half of the group that stayed out, they had discovered the brilliance of these punching machines. Because the brilliance of these punching machines isn't show how strong you are to your friends. It's there is a prize if you hit two specific numbers. And it has to be specific numbers. And the prize is a dildo.
Right.
The 934-point dildo is very big. But the 714-point dildo is fairly significant as well. I want to make it clear that these dildos on the open market are probably worth anywhere between $25 and $50. Now, that price point is going to be important later. Anyway. The four people that stayed out at the bar discovered these dildo punching games.
You.
And I did not discover them. Oh.
You were back at the house being responsible. Got it. Keep going.
I was back at the house being quote-unquote responsible. We go back out. We meet up with these guys. I believe the name of the bar was Friends Bar. Friends. Not the show. None of that goofy shit on the wall. Complete dive. Complete hole in the wall. Live music. Casual bar. Not a big crowd. and our four friends just wailing on this punching dildo machine in the back. Cool. Trying to win some dildos.
Think we've... Yep, okay.
Okay. Anyway, we show up, and these guys are like, no, we're going to get them. And I, in my infinite wisdom, who has been drinking since the hour of noon, and who has been having nothing but rum and cokes the entire time, say, I bet $250 none of you get one of these dildos. And they're like, you're on. So we're punching the machine. We were at this machine for probably an hour, hour and a half.
You were punching this for an hour and a half?
At least.
Wow.
We were at the machine long enough where everyone entering the bar, instead of going straight, again, complete strangers, entering the bar would come back to us, ask what the hell we were doing. We would explain it to them, and then they would go on with their night. Anyway, after about an hour, I, in my infinite wisdom, am texting a certain person I shouldn't be texting.
If it's not the someone one, if you're a longtime listener, it's not that one. Keep going.
Oh, no. I would say if it was Meg. It was not Meg.
Okay.
It was a certain person I shouldn't be texting. The only reason I was texting her is because senior year of college when I was dating her, the guys on this bachelor party were very involved in that relationship. Anyway, I start explaining to her how we are wailing on this machine trying to win a dildo.
Right.
And she goes, that's hilarious. And I was like, do you want it? And she's like, what? And I said, do you want me to win you this dildo? Will that help whatever is going on between us? And she's like, that sounds absolutely lovely. And I go,
great.
Fantastic. Don't worry about it. As soon as she says yes, I go, $500 if anyone gets the
Gregory,
dildo.
My poor, poor co-host boy.
Yeah, emphasis on poor. Everybody in the bar perks up. And this group of people come over and they said, no, come on, you're kidding. And I was like, no, no bullshit. If you hit that number exactly, $500 from me to you immediately.
Greg.
And this guy, let me do my best at explaining to him. I think he was in his 30s, but he looked like he was in his late 40s, early 50s.
That's a good job.
Life has been hard for this man. He had a mullet that looked like it hadn't been washed in at least 3 weeks. His teeth, some of them weren't present for
this
event.
I think we've got the paint. I understand.
Got it. He's like, he's like asking for tips on how to punch it. And the very other drunk people punching this machine are being like, oh, you got to go like this. And he was like, all right, I'm going to give it a try. And he hits the button to put the bag down, and he hits it. And the numbers start going. And I go, oh, this is interesting. And it keeps going. He gets to about 680. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And it starts slowing down around 700. And I go, oh, this is very interesting. And it was one of those – it's one of those crescendos where, like, you know when a player is on a breakaway?
Yep.
And you can hear the crowd starting to slowly get louder and louder and louder. And they're building to this anticipation of the moment. The breakaway for this man was the number going 710, 711, 712. When it got to 713, the band stopped playing. When it stopped on 714, the bar erupted in a way I had never heard an entire building erupt before. A bartender left the bar to run back to celebrate with us. We were holding the dildo like it was the fucking Stanley Cup. We were parading it around.
You guys had a
this
parade.
Man was, Ryan, in tears. He was crying because, again, I immediately, after I celebrated
you
for about 15 seconds.
$500.
Well, he introduced me to his very pregnant 20-something-year-old girlfriend, and she was at least the smart one who collected on the money. And I did it immediately. I've never seen people leave a bar faster. Because I think they thought I was going to be like, no, come on, it was a joke, give it back. I was like, no, fuck that. You won. You did the thing.
This is, Greg, God bless you.
The rest of the night, it's just a bunch of drunk dudes at different bars telling this story and waving dildos in people's faces. And from my experience, everybody loved it. Coyote Ugly had a really fun time with the dildo.
I can only imagine.
And that's all I'm going to say about that.
There you go. All right. Well,
we also lost the dildo at the end of the night.
No, that's the worst part of the story.
Kessler lost the dildo.
No, what?
Yeah,
I was like, ready to move on. So totally.
No, part of the problem with the dildo was when we were all getting ready to leave.
We've had this podcast for about 7 years now. We've never said the word dildo as many times as this podcast.
Yeah, well, I'm not using a dildo
as an analogy. No, I understand. Yeah,
we're talking a physical pink floppy dildo.
We're just describing it. We're not getting any notes. Totally
understand. Strong suction on the bottom of those things, though. Good for them. Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Kessler, we're all getting ready to leave this bar. There, seven of us, eight of us. I don't fucking know at this point. Seven of us are getting ready to leave the bar. Kessler parades me, my drunk fucking ass, outside and goes, Greg, don't move. I need to go get the other guys. And I say, okay. Now, my perspective, I was under the impression that I listened to these instructions very well, and I did not move.
I know you.
I don't recall moving. Well. I don't recall leaving. Not a single foot left pavement in my mind. Next thing I know, 10 minutes goes by. I get a phone call. It's Kessler. He says, where the fuck are you? And I said, exactly where you left me. He's like, that's impossible. I'm exactly where I left you. What street are you on? And I look up. And I tell him what street I'm on. And he goes, how the fuck did you get a quarter mile away from me? And I said, Ryan, swear to God, this is not an exaggeration. This is not a joke. Oh. I have no idea. I did not move in my eyes. Nothing happened. All that happened was I was dropped somewhere. Oh, and next thing I was told is where I was dropped is not where I should have been.
Whew. All right. Greg, God bless. I'm happy you're okay. That's the moral of the story. And everyone out there.
I apologize to the people I left drunk voicemails to. Because there were a couple of you.
Especially
and I'm
one.
I'm sorry.
And yeah.
No, her.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I might be in big trouble. He's a pilot, you see, Ryan.
Okay.
The person.
Greg, they've already said too much. Just I'm here as your producer. I'm just covering you, buddy. Don't do this. You're good. You're good. That's it.
Anyway, Austin, Texas. Highly recommend.
Anyway,
great
Austin,
barbecue.
Austin Matthews.
Solid steakhouses. Oh, I should also say, I did get to a point where I had been telling The Bachelor all day to walk up to people, do the horns down, and say Boomer Sooner, and I gave them no context for it. Now, the problem is, I said those words too many, and I had so many drinks that at some point, you only recall the words you say most often throughout the day. So, unfortunately for me, that meant I was now the one doing horns down and saying Boomer Sooner to everybody. I did not make as many friends as I thought I would make.
Yeah, I'd imagine it didn't go well. All right, let's get to it, shall we?
I guess so.
Over the weekend when you were doing your thing, the Rangers did...
When play. I was drunk, Ryan, that's, just call it like it is.
That's correct. The Rangers did end up playing two games. To be honest, you didn't miss much.
I heard they won twice.
They did.
Did they win twice?
Yeah, they did, in considerably convincing fashion.
Well, look at that.
I know, right? Igor Shesterkin, turns out he's a Hart candidate. If you believe he is, we're going to talk to Travis Yost of TSN in about, I don't know, 20 minutes from now. Considerably about this, and I think you, I all credit to you, Greg, you were the first person, at least I heard, that said the Rangers should go in for Igor Shesterkin. We'll see if they actually go all in, because Igor has been absolutely unreal this year, no doubt about it. Rangers beat the Devils 3-1. Then they kind of like manhandled the Jets, even though like there was plenty of shots from the Jets, and Igor faced plus 40 shots, of which he is, by the way, 10-0-0 when facing 40-plus shots, which is a ridiculous stat. This is one of those things where I'm going to be that non-analytic guy. I watched the game, dude. They dominated the entire time, despite the six penalties they gave up, which was absolutely ridiculous. But even then, Igor Shesterkin just took care of business. No big deal. Game was, honestly, pretty relaxing. Pretty great time. And,
well, isn't it? Didn't that game give you the vibe that, like, one team was forced to shoot more because they just had to? And the other team is like, we don't really care if you do. We're just going to win this game anyway.
Yeah, Chris Kreider was just like, hey, listen, I'm unstoppable right now. Power play, I'm automatic. Guy scores like every other power play. It's unbelievable. Had a breakaway score. Very Chris Kreider-esque. Scored two. He's at 37 right now. I'm probably going to finish in the – definitely going to finish in the top three in scoring, it seems, at this point. Could hit 50, which seems unreasonable. But the whole team, like, it was just one of the situations where the Jets stayed. Their Jets were at home. To be honest, the stadium was packed, but it was quiet. It was like a movie theater. I was, like, shocked. Nobody booed when Jacob Trouba touched the puck. I believe it was his first time back. Nobody cared or gave a shit. Trouba ended up scoring as well. It just was like a solid win. The team continued to move on. And it's not really interesting to break down those games because, honestly, they just were really easy, comfortable wins for the Rangers, which we really haven't gotten a lot of this year.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. Wish I had more insight.
That's fine. I got actually a better conversation for you to have with me.
Oh, my.
I thought about this today.
$600 dildos.
No, but rather defensemen. In this case...
The dildos of the NHL world. Anyway.
Yes. The dildo episode. Anywho, there's a lot of trade fodder right now, a lot of trade conversation. There's trade articles coming out from everybody, right? Everybody's trying to get them clicks.
Did you say trade father?
Fodder.
I was about to say, would you know what trade father would be like?
What is this father concept you're describing?
You see, Franco was at one of the Met games recently.
I saw it. And then the Rangers, the Rangers posted John Franco's stupid face. Anyway, on their Twitter. And they're like, oh, look at the stars. Okay. Anyway.
See, I had my dildo of the weekend. You had your dildo of the week. And there you go.
Someone in the Discord, count the dildos on this episode. Anywho, there's been a lot of trade fodder. I want to ask you a couple different questions about players that you would be surprised or not if they got traded.
Okay.
The reason I say this is because in our Discord, we were talking about it today. You know, I just can't see a situation where Schneider or Miller gets traded. So I want to rate you on a 1 to scale 10, a scale 1 to 10 of where we go, of how surprised
a 1 to scale of 10. I can do that.
You got it.
Are you drunk this time?
No, actually, I just had a really long week and day.
It's so you're not going to start talking about people's chest hairs all of a sudden?
Definitely not. And I'm sitting down. So in this case, let's start with the obvious answers. People I believe that will get traded. And I've actually gone down on some of these names, and I wonder if you have as well. I'm starting to get the feeling that Nils Lundqvist isn't getting traded. Have you changed on that?
No. You're getting that feeling because he's playing well in Hartford?
I'm not only getting that feeling because he's playing well in Hartford, but just because, and I know that Drury's locked up, like the information just doesn't come out, but it does seem to be the general consensus that Drury doesn't want to trade Nils for a quote-unquote rental.
Okay, so, but like, what are you going to trade him for then? Because here's the thing, there's no room for Nils Lundqvist. In the eyes of the New York Rangers, there's no room for him. So my problem is, it's nice that they now are maybe possibly understanding the value and excellence of Nils Lundqvist. But like, unless they actually go to an 11-7 lineup all year and it's not Lieber Hayek in the lineup doing it,
buddy.
At some point, there just isn't room for a dude. I still think he's getting traded. I would say the odds in my eyes are still fairly high.
We have Travis Yost TSN on later, as we mentioned, and he plugs during that time the TSN trade bait list. In the top 50, there's no Vitali Kravtsov at all. And I find that shocking because I do feel like he's the one I have at like a 10, the guy who's definitely getting traded. And I'm assuming that hasn't changed for you at all as well.
Yeah, no. Do I think Vitali Kravtsov is ever going to play a game for the New York Rangers again? No. Do I think NHL teams are more nervous about trading for a guy who is currently plying his trade in Russia? Yes. Big time. I think I saw today that the memorandum of understanding between the NHL and the KHL has been severed. I know that Kravtsov is under an NHL contract, so he does not get impacted under those rules as another player would who is a just KHL only contract. But I do think that because of world circumstances, there are teams uncertain about whether a player they are acquiring who is currently playing in Russia is going to be a player that will be able to ever play for them. And I do think that is it's a fair consideration at this point in time. I'm not making a comment about any of the situation going on over there. I'm not saying anything.
Right.
I'm just saying a result of everything that is happening.
You're just letting
a team wanting to acquire a certain player who is currently playing in Russia is maybe now thinking twice about it. So I do think that is a large reason why you're not seeing his name floated around nearly as much anymore.
That brings me to Julian Gauthier. I feel like he's the odd man out, and I don't know why I feel this way. I understand that he creates penalty, creates offense, and you've made that case and argument here. But something about him, and I think he was scratched for personal reasons. I don't want to get into it entirely, but there has to be a reason he was scratched there. Obviously, they didn't want to play the way they don't want to play. Who wants to play 11-7? Nobody. Absolutely nobody. The Lieber Hayek giving him time thing, I don't believe that shit What sort?
Crocker shit. The king liar himself.
For sure. Glenn, king liar in that way. But I feel like Gauthier is kind of like on the way out. I'd have him around like a 6.
As much as I like him and as much as you watch him,
I can see the potential. I see it. I don't know if he'll ever finish.
But like what's the trade where he's a piece involved? You know what I'm saying?
I guess to me, he would be involved in an Anaheim trade for Raquel.
But like, what else are you sending out that makes Gauthier a relatively, not significant, but important feature in that trade?
I think he's usually attached to another piece in a pick in that case.
So
you're getting a controlled player with upside, no matter what, for another team.
But that pick is at least a second.
At least a second.
In my eyes, right?
Guaranteed. Lock it up.
So the Gauthier piece of this is essentially you're bringing in a winger. You don't want to make a roster move, so you have to send out a winger.
Yep. That's exactly it.
Okay. All right. So then under that guise, yes. I don't think the Rangers are going to trade for Raquel and then turn around and trade Gauthier for a 4th.
I agree. It's not like, hey, let's just get rid of this guy no matter what. To me, he's always part of this shakeup that Drury might do in these next 2 weeks, which I can't believe. We've been talking about this trade deadline for what it seems like 3 months now, and we're 2 weeks away, and yet nothing's happened just yet. As we say, tradition, it's going to be the last day. I have a couple more names for you. Philip Hedl? Whew. I don't know where I stand on Hedl.
I know where you should stand on Hedl.
I want to keep
the fact
Hedl.
That he's still a 20. Yeah, he's a 22-year-old with all the talent in the world. All he has to do is, I understand that there's a chance that Philip Hedl never reaches his potential. Obviously,
left-handed
chance for
manager.
Every player. Yeah, it's just we've spent this much time with him. It'd be a real shame if you jump ship now, right? He's a child. He's an under control cheap child. He's child labor. It's fantastic. Get those kids back in the factories. Let's do it. 12-year-olds, they've had enough. I was a man at 13 when I had my bar mitzvah. And then flash forward 20 years, and I was offering $500 for someone to win a dildo for an ex-girlfriend who was very much in a relationship. And that was the thing that I was doing. I say child labor is needed because maybe it would have kept me out of that bar. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Greg,
very
controversial take episode for you. Very funny.
Anyway.
Phil Hedl, to me, just has, in a couple of minutes, she just has all the upside that you'd want in a player like that. He's still cheap. Obviously, he's going to need a new contract the next year or two here. But to me, trading away something like that, when Ottawa traded away Mika Zibanejad, he'd been injured, he'd been off playing, he'd been not producing, and then all of a sudden he gets to the Rangers and he explodes. That's the last thing I want to see happen to Philip Hedl if he goes somewhere else.
Not just that point, Ryan. Do you have any confidence that if Hedl is traded, the piece coming back is going to be a piece that you actually see value in?
No, not at all.
Right? Like, we've heard Jake DeBrusque for how long?
I would not do DeBrusque for Hedl. And I'm sure...
And you shouldn't have to trade Hedl for a Raquel.
Exactly. To me, those are rental pieces. Like, I'm giving away Philip Hedl for this. Like, that's a lot of value. Like, even if Philip Hedl doesn't ever go to his final form of whatever that is, he's a great cost-controlled player, of which the Rangers are desperate for. Very desperate.
Yeah. Now, I will say this. If Hedl was a piece in a trade for a Tomas Hertl or a Joe Pavelski, I swallow that pill. That's the cost of doing business, right? We're specifically saying Philip Hedl for a marginal upgrade, or even worse, just a different underwhelming piece from a different underwhelming team. That is not a deal I would make with Philip Hedl.
Agreed. Then I'm going to bring you to the last two, because I keep seeing like their names pop up on national media, and I just see a way. More importantly,
have you seen those names pop up from Old Mick?
I have not.
Okay. Well, then they're not Mickey, getting traded. Are you sure you want to talk
about them? Rangers is what you're talking about? The famous Twitter account?
Yeah, the Big 8.
Big 8. I love Mickey. If you're not following Mickey, you gotta. It's the only Twitter account I promote. I haven't seen that, but I've seen Schneider and Miller pop up everywhere over the past couple days. And I just, I know Vancouver likes Schneider, but
how many times do we have to have this conversation, Ryan? I feel like I'm going to shake it from your shoulders. You see it pop up because the Rangers don't talk. So what are the names that teams that actually talk going to keep saying?
We like,
of course, other teams. Yeah, of course, other teams want Keandre Miller and Braden Schneider. They're good. They're young. They're cost controlled, and they want other teams to feel like that is the price set for the pieces they are trading. Of course, you're going to see those names, but the Rangers don't talk to anybody. You know how I know the Rangers don't talk to anybody? So I've seen one more fucking JT Miller rumor. I'm going to put my head through a goddamn wall. Chris Drury doesn't talk. We said this every time we've podcasted since like fucking June. That guy is Fort Knox. Nothing comes out. All the speculation you hear surrounding the New York Rangers are coming from team sources not connected to the New York Rangers.
And agents. That's it.
Yeah. So those teams want Keandre Miller and Braden Schneider. Absolutely. Makes total sense. The Rangers aren't trading them. I don't know how else to say that.
All right. Let's get to some five-star questions, and then let's get to our good friend Travis Yost.
Okie dokie artichoke. Are any of them about dildos?
They're none of them about dildos so far. But I haven't read all of them, so we'll get to them. This is from Just Gypsy. In a world where Georgiev is not traded this season, do you think the team should give him more steady playing time? We can stop right there.
No.
There was more to that question, but I think we can stop right there.
Yeah, I understand the mindset of the question, right? Because Georgiev is a player who seemingly needs more playing time in order to play better, right? But the New York Rangers, a playoff contending team, have the best goalie in the National Hockey League. It would be like, do you think the Mets should start other pitchers besides Jacob deGrom if they could?
Nope.
The answer is no. Just you go with your good guy as much as humanly possible.
Agreed. This is from Seamus. What would you need for a satisfying return for Filipino? We kind of just broke this down a little bit. It can't be just.
Yeah, he would. If it's getting someone else's broken part, I don't want to do it. But if the Sharks require him for Hurdle or the Stars, who I don't think are at this point going to trade Pavelski, but like if the Stars wanted to trade him for Pavelski, it has to be a player I view as a significant impact that could significantly improve the Rangers' Stanley Cup winning odds. And those are two players I think that can do it.
This is from NYR Coys 15. Interested in what you guys think of the cost for Kane at 50% retained for the next 1.5 seasons would be. It's astronomical. And I know that they're rebuilding in Chicago. I totally understand this. But the package this person says is Hedl, Niels/Jones, or Kraftsoff in a first. So that's like the Eichel package. So see, that Eichel package for Kane, Eichel's still 24, as you can see now as he's performing pretty good and has come back from the neck surgery. Like, go look at Kane's numbers and analytics. They're not so great. I don't really see him as an option or solution for this team. As the end-all, be-all that is, if this team gets Kane, are they going to win the cup just because of him? I don't think so. Like, I don't think it increases their odds all that substantially. Do you?
No, I don't. Like, no. No's the short answer. I also just don't have, like, a taste for Patrick Kane. I don't want him. I don't want to root for him.
He's fun.
I don't want to talk about him right now, on a weekly basis. Yeah. I'll say this. Listen. We can't act surprised when star players decide that they don't want to leave places that are rebuilding. Have to remember that Henrik Lundqvist decided to stay. So it's not a guarantee that Patrick Kane's going to tell the Blackhawks he wants to leave. I'm not 1,000% confident he wants out of Chicago. I think he's very comfortable there. His name's on a couple cups because of Chicago. I can't tell you right now for sure that Patrick Kane is going to want out just because the Blackhawks are going to be bad. I think he might hang around. And he might stick there. But I'll tell you what, there's 0.7% chance Kane's moved before the trade deadline. You want to have this conversation again in the summertime when he's an expiring contract and more people will have cap space and the Rangers won't? That'd be interesting. But I don't think the Blackhawks are rushing to a decision on Patrick Kane for this season. I don't think they see a need to.
Vinny Hay also asks about Philip Hedl and said he's looked better and say he's earned his time. The jury's out on Hedl. Nice job. Great job. This is from our friend Fitz. The Rangers essentially took four high upside picks in the first round during the first 2 years of the rebuild. Hedl, Kraftsoff, Miller, and Niels. It seems like Miller is the only one that has a chance of hitting the upside with the team. So I'll ask, are you still a fan of going for the upside when drafting, do you consider hitting one out of four to be a success? This is a good question.
I consider one of Miller and Lundqvist hitting to be a success for sure.
I do too, especially because they're late round picks. And Hedl was too. He's 21.
Yeah, and Hedl seems like he'll have an NHL career, which is more than you can expect from drafting someone at 21st overall. I think it's muddled because the two top 10 picks are very clear zeros, right? So, like, that's tough. It's very tough to miss on the two picks that you're not supposed to miss on and then hit on, like, three of the picks you're not supposed to hit on.
Zeros is Kristoff and Lias, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Because also it's like, well, what does Nils Lundqvist get the New York Rangers, right? So, like, he doesn't play for the New York Rangers, but as an asset, which is what the Rangers acquired when they got him, are they going to get something that is better than the 28th overall pick in the first round? Like, what does the Nils Lundqvist trade tree look like when he leaves the New York Rangers? How does it continue? But I think if you told me on draft day when the Rangers took Keandre Miller and Nils Lundqvist that one of those two players was going to be guaranteed top four guy for the New York Rangers for the next decade, you and I would have both said, fantastic, that's more than I can expect. If you told me when the Rangers drafted a 17-year-old, 21st overall, that he'd be a productive NHL player by the time he was 22, and the thing you'd be most frustrated about was that he wouldn't be more productive than you thought he should be at that point, I'd be like, that sounds like a good problem to have. So, like, for those three picks, I really can't, in hindsight, complain about them. It's impressive that the Rangers have very minimal complaints and have exceeded expectation with the late round first round picks. And then just, but again, the Kravtsov one, what's the one thing the Rangers have needed all year?
It's Kravtsov.
A Vitali, it's Kravtsov.
It's just so Kravtsov. Like,
yeah, it's hard to say.
This actually goes into our next two questions. Just Gypsy and Filthy Horvat both ask, you know, what would you still want to get a top six right wing spot, especially with Kako coming back whenever he does because of the way the top line is playing? And the answer is yes. And I don't mind moving Kako down to the third line if this is what it takes. Travis Yost will talk about Phil Kessel later in this episode, and one thing he mentions is putting him with a good center. I have no problem putting Kessel on that line. I don't think Panarin would want him there, but I have no issue with that. Kako can move down. He can be flexible. I'm not going to be pissed off if we're making a playoff run and Kako's on the third line. Kako is
I'll even simplify it to you. I can't sit here and tell you for sure that Kako's going to be healthy for the playoffs.
I can't either. I mean, you
can't fucking do it. I don't think you should be a good organization operates under the assumption that Kako, it's going to take longer than it should. And no fucking idea.
Even if he comes back, you're not, you're seconds away from re-injury. It's a wrist. He's got a brace on. It could take just one wrong turn. It's like, well, there goes your right winger. That's a problem.
When Kako, that's a good problem to have. Oh, no, the Rangers have two guys for one spot in the top six. I'd love for the Rangers to have that problem. They currently have -3 guys for the top six. So, like, I'll trade the good problem for the bad problem I'm living in right now.
Agar asks, should the Rangers become money launderers and use some of their deadline cap space of the $30 million to take on assets from other teams? That would be smart. They can. What else are they doing with it?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if they will.
The Rangers should be doing a lot of things right now that makes them better today and for the long term, and they're currently not doing any of them. So I would
do diligence.
The Rangers should also trade Alexander Georgiev. How many times have we said that?
6 years.
The Rangers sat on this, but it honestly gets me angry. The Rangers have had all year to turn Vitali Kravtsov into whatever the fuck they want, and they waited so long that a world war broke out, and now they might not be able to trade him.
It's true. They did wait. This is from David. Are the Mets actually the Rangers? Insane starting pitching / goaltending and stacked offense that can't behave produced normally in front of greatness.
Do you think we do this podcast?
That's why we do the show. This is from TSE1231. You get to transfer one player in the NHL on his current deal to the Rangers at the deadline. No assets given, no retention allowed. Who would you pick? Connor McDavid. Next question. That's really it.
Yeah, I mean, if we're doing like guys we've talked about as trade targets, it's either Hurdle or Pavelski. Like, it's just those two for me.
Yep. Sean Carlson, with the amount of cap space the Rangers have and the fact that they're going to make the playoffs, do you see them getting involved in a three-team deal as pass through some other player pass through for some other playoff teams that happen to be up against the cap. No, I don't think they would help other teams that they're going to the playoffs with at all.
Maybe in the West. They're not going to help anyone in the East.
No way. This is from Brett. If you can go back in time and attend two Ranger games you weren't at and two non-Ranger games, what would you pick? This is a whole OT. But you were at the Stepan game, so that's one for me.
Wish I remembered more of it, though.
Yep, very similar to the story earlier.
I was nowhere near that drunk. The ending of it is very similar, where, again, I lost them. Lost someone that was right in front of me. That's the very impressive part.
So many more questions.
I would say...
Game 7, 94, and Stepan. That's where I'd want to be. I don't know. What else do you want me to say?
But the thing is, I think I'd rather be at games 6 and 7 of the Eastern. Now that we've watched it.
The Devils
games were so much better than the Vancouver games.
They're so good. Damn, they're good. This is from episode 29. Greg, would you rather DeGrom home run or Igor goal? I think this is Igor goal. I don't think it's close.
I've seen DeGrom hit a home run.
Yeah, DeGrom hits home runs all the time. He's a fucking stud.
Not anymore, RIP.
Yeah. Cribanajad, is Valley going to lose his job for mentioning you on Twitter? No, thanks for promotion, Valley. I appreciate it.
Hey, they got a new PR guy in there. He's going to listen to this dildo episode. Be like, he's like, those are the guys that we should send people to.
I did DM him today. And I was like, hey, my name's Ryan. I heard you got the new PR job. I do a podcast.
Here's our latest episode. Ryan, sit down. Let me tell you about the time again.
Oh, God.
$500 for a dildo to send a girl
You know what?
We'll never date again.
I have a lot of important stuff going on in my life, and I knew this story was coming, and I was like, God damn it.
You heard about it as it happened.
I know.
You knew.
I knew. But that's
you
why,
knew.
That's why I was dreading. I was like, I can't tell him not to tell this story. I'm not going to do that. But it is very strange timing. So if you were listening, PR guy, it is a good show. Thanks.
Good story.
Rubby, the Steve Dangle podcast guys recently talked about how good defensive pairs have a spear, offensive-minded, and a shield, defensive-minded player. Like old Spartan Warriors. Got me thinking about the Ranger pairs with who are spears and shields. I mean, this makes sense. I mean, this to me, Truba's a spear, Miller's a shield. And then same thing with Fox is the spear, and Lindgren's a shield. And that's Schneider? They're both shields down there for right now.
I got to tell you, I feel like Truba is both the spear and the shield, and it allows Miller to just be like an archer.
Yeah, he kind of like, because Miller can do a lot. It's that he has the offensive ability. He can also go coast to coast.
I feel like Truba being able to do both allows Keandre Miller to do both. So I feel like Truba is the spear and the shield, and Miller literally is shooting arrows at people.
Captain Dick Rip says Hayek is more like a pool noodle. I agree. Final question from Alexa. Which current Ranger would get their number retired? The answer is Adam Fox and possibly number 31. We'll see.
Yes. I think those are the obvious ones.
I don't think Kreider gets there. He's close.
If he gets named captain,
win a cup, he'll go up.
Well, yes. I think if they win a cup, I think him and Zibanejad will go up there. I do think Zibanejad's interesting because he's going to score a lot of goals over the rest. Like, when all's said and done, would you be surprised if Mika Zibanejad was the New York Rangers career goals leader?
No, he is going to score a shit ton.
So, like, if he's the number one goal scorer in New York Ranger history, you can't tell me 93 has no chance of going up in the draft.
I know. It's funny. We haven't even mentioned Panarin in this conversation, but I don't think he has a chance, even though he's a fucking
monster. I think it's very different when it's a player you would. Like, Zibanejad was acquired so young that you forget the Rangers traded for him, right?
Sometimes, yeah. He was just.
So, like, I don't know. Zibanejad's tough. I think Kreider gets up there if the Rangers win a cup, and I think Zibanejad gets up there if he
just
pots 40 plus goals for. Yeah, like if he just keeps scoring 30 plus over the 8 years of his contract, like he's a Ranger for 8 more fucking years.
Very true. All right, we have.
You're gonna tell me for sure that guy's not gonna get his number up there.
Can't say that for sure, but the guaranteed lock of the century is Adam Fox will be at the Raptors. Like,
and at this point,
it's locked.
It would be more shocking if something happened to Igor and he wasn't one of the guys too.
Yeah, those are the top two. Don't think it's close. All right, we'll be right back. No, I don't think there's an ad today. So transition right into Travis Yost. Transition. Hey, back with recurring guest Travis Yost of TSN. Travis, thank you so much for joining us yet again.
Recurring means I'm a legend now. Just want to remind you again.
You were a legend the first time, to be honest. I mean, you were big time for us. It was huge. We had like, you know, 6 people listening to us. It was awesome. And now look at us, 200 people. Anyway, let's get right to it. Who's your heart candidate and why is it Igor Shesterkin?
It's down to 2. It's Igor Shesterkin as a goalie or Austin Matthews in Toronto. This is now the, 90th time that we're sitting here as voters weighing the best goaltender versus the best skater. And, not necessarily that, Matthews is far and away the best skater like Shesterkin has been the best goaltender, but it is a little difficult to consistently make these cross position comparisons. And when I look at, and the other thing is like, it's also harder this year to differentiate between them because, the Rangers have a lot of scoring pop. Yes. And certainly are for the 9th year in a row, the best countering attacking team in the league, but more often than not, I mean, what they do, the magic they make in the defensive zone and frustrating defenses starts with goaltending. Right. And he has been far and away most valuable player for the Rangers. On the other hand, you watch a Maple Leafs game and it's, you don't see a whole lot at the depth of the position, especially third and fourth line, second and third pair, the usual stuff that you see from most teams around the league. But Matthews has been such a dynamic single individual talent this year and has elevated that team in a way that honestly no one else has at a skater level. I mean, he doesn't have the help that McDavid and Draisaitl have with one another. His team is materially better than that of Edmonton's. I do think it is a flat-out two-horse race between the two, and quite frankly, if I was going to give a nod, it would probably be to the goalie because, quite frankly, goalies are more valuable. And if you're talking about who's added most value to their team, most wins, in that line of thought, I don't see how you could put Matthews 1. But again, this is just an easy way for me to re-argue the same point I have for years, which is at some point we need to get to a best skater and best goaltender. They are fundamentally different positions. They have fundamentally different value. And you ask 100 people, they value the position 100 different ways. It makes it very hard to have any sort of confidence in the voting. Certainly if it feels like it's flipping a coin between best goalie and best skater, which it again feels like this year.
The Travis, the argument I've been using on this podcast since we decided to, ruffle some feathers, stir the pot with this conversation. Just replace the two on each team, right? So Igor Shesterkin joins the Toronto Maple Leafs, but they lose Austin Matthews. I'm fairly confident the Toronto Maple Leafs are in a rather similar position in the standings than they are as they are right now. Now you take Igor Shesterkin away from the Rangers. You bring Austin Matthews to the Rangers. I'm still fairly confident that the Rangers are now out of the playoff picture, even with a great player like Austin Matthews on the team. That, in my eyes, is how important Igor Shesterkin has been to the Rangers. And that, to me, is the entire heart conversation.
Well, counter-argument. Here's my counter-argument to your counter-argument. You ready?
Yep.
I could make that argument about the best goalie every single year. I really could. And moving back from the Rangers for a second, stepping back, Tuukka Rask had a claim on this trophy probably for 4 consecutive years. Carey Price had a claim on this trophy. Connor Hellebuck's had a claim on this trophy. Quite frankly, unless you have the vast majority of goaltenders really producing around league averages, which is never going to happen, you're always going to have a hot goalie. You're always going to have a very talented goalie get hot. I think we've seen a culmination of that here. There is no doubt in my mind the player who has added the most wins to the standings this season is Shesterkin, not Austin Matthews. However, what's true this year, that's really where, and I don't mean to make this a referendum on how we vote and what logic we apply, but, in some breath, it's like you're going to have a really, really difficult time ever finding a scenario where the best skater really was more valuable than the best goaltender. And I think the stats community, right, wrong, or otherwise, has taken multiple stabs at this in terms of trying to how to apportion it, how to appropriately apportion player value at each position. And obviously, I think there's significant level of effort that's been made there. But even if you were doing from basic stats all the way up to, some more multi-regression type goals above replacement measures, you consistently land on goaltenders are marginally more valuable when they are playing at the top of their game. So I don't disagree with you at all. I just, you know, for the sanctity of the Hart, and that's air quotes on sanctity, for the sanctity of the Hart Trophy, I would love on a going forward basis to know when it is appropriate to vote for a skater, because I think you're absolutely right, but that is the problem.
See, the thing with Igor, though, is he's just doing something that most goalies have never done. I mean, his save percentage is absolutely ridiculous. I think the stat is if he saves 32 of the next 34, his save percentage actually goes down. Like, that's insane. And yet he's putting up numbers that we haven't really seen from a goalie since Price about 5-6 years ago. And usually, yep, I would agree with your case, but this is an outlier position where Igor is just doing something that goalies don't usually do. Whereas you make a great case there that why there should always be a separate skater and goalie situation. And I agree with you. That's what the Vezina is for, right? But when something happens like this with a goalie where he's performing at such a high level where we don't see it, or you haven't seen it in the last, you know, 20 years, something like that.
Yeah.
It's got to be a no-brainer to vote for him for the Hart, because you've made the case. He is the most valuable on the ice, no doubt about it. You can make the case for that for every single year for goalies, for sure. But this is just a special occasion. He's doing something that, like I said, not a lot of goalies in history can do.
No, I would agree, and I would have him. It is a two-horse race, but I'd have him number one on my ballot. I do think, though, and like it does it. It kind of is a branch on the same tree of the offensive player of the year versus NFL MVP. I mean, it's the same debate. It's same book, different chapter, right? It's like, well, you know, a wide receiver is never more valuable than a quarterback, but how do I weigh Cooper Kupp 2,000 yards, right? It's the same exact conversation, different sport. But, yeah, I mean, he has been far and away, in my opinion, he's been far and away the most valuable player to his team. I don't really think that's a point of dispute. I mean, look where they are in the standings and look how many wins and look how many games that they have really ensnared from their opposition in games where they've either been competitive or they've been outplayed. I mean, the guy is just a ridiculous eraser. And then, like, I know it sounds, I know everyone in New York automatically goes to this, but like when you have national, you know, types that are only catching a couple handfuls of Rangers games a year, or any team for that matter, and they're saying, oh yeah, that's Henrik Lundqvist 2.0. I mean, that's as big of a compliment as you can get. And quite frankly, this season it is like Henrik Lundqvist is playing that behind them, because he's great and steady and predictable. And when you need him to bail your team out on a 3-on-2 or a 2-on-1, he's not going to take himself out of position. He's calm, cool, and collected. He knows how to play his post. He knows how to play the angles. Is he hot right now? Yeah, sure. But will he cool off at some point? Yeah, sure. But I think he's already showing that he's entrenching himself as a top five goalie in the league, which is ridiculous. And certainly, playing on this NFL note, it does feel very Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers in the New York Rangers net, doesn't it? Right. To go from Lundqvist to this Igor is just mind boggling, quite frankly.
Well, to put a bow on the Hart conversation, then I promise we can start talking about almost anything else. Does it also speak to the volume that does it come down to the gap between the number one goalie and the number two goalie for them to really have to be in the Hart conversation? Like this whole conversation isn't a knock on a guy like Andre Vasilevskiy, right? But there just isn't another goalie in National Hockey League doing what Igor Shesterkin is doing. And he's separated himself so far from the competition that it feels like we need to give him a different award.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think you can get there. Again, that's still a little bit murky from a statistical standpoint. But, I mean, you could use something as simple as Z-scores or something related to compare, you know, within the position and how much daylight a player has on, let's say, you know, second best to silver medal. I do think matters, because you can point and say that player is materially better than anyone else in the world in his position. Whereas, you know, there is daylight. Matthews does have daylight between him and number two. But that daylight is shrunk in relative terms. So I think that is the right way to go about it. I completely agree. But it's also interesting, even from a goaltending perspective, is it like, so you had the Carey Price example. That was the 2016 season where he went just, you know, supernova all year, right? There have been other instances where, like, you know, Tuukka Rask carried these ridiculous save percentages on an elite, elite defensive team, right? One of the best defensive teams we've seen in the last 20 years. And then I go back to Connor Hellebuck like 3-4 years ago, where he had a very good save percentage, but you could have made a statistical argument that he was facing some of the most difficult shots of any goaltender that we had seen in the last 5-7 years. And it's like, okay, well, maybe from raw save percentage, there's not as much daylight. But if you're looking at something like goals versus expected, I mean, the gap between Hellebuyck in that season and runner-up was so extraordinary. It was the size of the Caribbean. So, you know, I think there's nuance even within the position, but I do think that is an appropriate way to look at it, because to me, that's much more apples to apples than saying, okay, well, who added more value, Matthews or Igor, and then, or switching teams or getting in. I mean, there's so many contextual things that create confusion. And trust me, I've done them all. It's just, I try and figure out what is the clearest path forward. And unfortunately, when you get in these situations, sometimes there's no black and white answer.
Let's talk about the playoffs, even though they're not really close here, but they feel set to me, at least, especially in the East. Let's not, we're a Rangers podcast, no joke there. So Rangers Penguins seems to be the most logical outcome. It seems that everyone wants to play Washington if they have the option to. The Hurricanes seem to be running away a little bit right now with the Metro, and also the Atlantic is all set. Where do you see any of this changing whatsoever? Because I feel like we could start the playoffs tomorrow in the East if we really wanted.
No, I go look. The article I'm most proud of this year. It was the day after New Year's. I wrote an article at TSN, and I thought my editor was going to slap me, but he did not. And the article was basically the Eastern Conference is already resolved. It's done. The only playoff race that really exists in the Pacific Division. And quite frankly, it's been like what, seven weeks since that, and it's exactly the same. I mean, the Eastern Conference. You may have swaps between the 2 and 3 slots. Like, I know Toronto's 5 points behind Florida, for example, and Rangers Pittsburgh are split, so they're playing for home and away in all likelihood. I mean, it's not like Carolina's wrapped up that division either, but you know with extremely high confidence who the 8 teams are going to represent the Eastern Conference, and have known that for months. I actually don't – I really do not remember, and you guys can check me on this, but I really do not remember a regular season – where a conference was ultimately decided at the halfway point. I mean, by like game 35-40, Tampa, Florida, Toronto, Carolina, the Rangers, Pittsburgh, maybe Boston, it was a little bit murky, but it was at least 7 of those teams had effectively already locked up playoff spots. And quite frankly, like if you look at the Western Conference right now, where the playoff race was, like it took a Dallas has just been ripping hot for the last 5 weeks, and they've really entered the fray, but it's really just been kind of what's going to happen in the Pacific. And these are the types of seasons where, the NBA and the NHL are so yin and yang, it's not even funny. And there's really good things about the NBA. There's really good things about the NHL. The parity in the NHL, I think, is a net good thing. Although I would like to see the regular season not be painfully long, because every so often you get a season like this where parity, forced or otherwise, really hasn't led to anything other than a lot of meaningless games and potential injuries, especially in the East, over the next 30 games or so.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't recall a division or conference in any league that has been this just open and shut. Like, right, the only question there was for a little bit there, it was the Bruins and the Islanders had both not played a lot of games. The Bruins, because apparently nobody knows how to make a schedule. The Islanders because of the pandemic. And then once the Islanders caught everybody up on the games, they still weren't playing well. And we're like, well, I guess it's just not going to make it up. So this is it. And it's, do you think, what is the path of least resistance in the East in your eyes? Like who has the best shot to make their way out of there because they have to go through a certain road?
See, this is the fun part. There is no path of least resistance, right? I mean, on one hand, in the Atlantic, you got to deal with Tampa Bay, Florida, and Toronto. And trust me, even though I work for TSN, I've taken great pride and joy in reminding everyone there that the Maple Leafs have really never been a contender for all intents and purposes. Too many weaknesses, too many holes in the lineup. I have pivoted this year. I think Toronto is legit for the first time. And so when they lose in the first round, now I'm going to hear about it. But between Tampa Bay, Florida, Toronto, Carolina, and the Rangers in Pittsburgh are obviously no slouches. You've got 6 teams there that are effectively interchangeable. Like me personally, if you said, Trav, you get one team to avoid, the entirety of the playoffs, I want to avoid, really, it's convenient, but it's true. It's the 2 division leaders right now. I would probably say Carolina 1, Tampa Bay 2. I know Tampa Bay's got the prove it factor. They've got a very veteran laden team that are still in their prime, right? And that matters an absolute ton. On the other hand, I think the real death match in the conference, so long as Toronto can get their goaltending situated, that Florida Toronto 2-3, I think, is going to be the best opening round, probably the cruelest opening round. I mean, Rangers Pittsburgh is comparable, but I think the talent is just a tick better in the Atlantic. On the other hand, you know, which team, the path of least resistance. Again, going back into early January when I was like, well, what the hell am I going to write about the Eastern Conference for the next 4 months since it's already decided? I think one of the really interesting things, and they've turned it on of late, the Boston Bruins, who notoriously for, you know, I've been a maybe the most dominant team of the decade, you know, after San Jose kind of fall off a little bit. The Bruins' record against playoff caliber teams, those top 16 teams in either conference, at least at the time when I ran it, the Bruins were like 20 goals in the red against playoff caliber clubs. And it's why they're sitting fourth in the Atlantic right now. It's basically effectively every time they've played a Tampa, Florida, Toronto, Carolina, New York, Pittsburgh, they've gotten touched up pretty bad. And that is a pretty big shift from what we're accustomed to from the Bruins organization. I think if everyone had to bet on one really good team that's obviously aging out, you know, it's the Bruins. So that seems to correlate. That's the opponent I want. It seems like Tampa Bay is setting themselves up for a possible matchup there. I think Washington's obviously a relatively weak team too, but unless you're going to get the top seed and draw one of those two, and Boston is no slouch. It's really just Washington, right? But unless you're drawing one of those two, you are in for a whale of an Eastern Conference bracket, because those top I don't know where I stand on Pittsburgh, but I do think Tampa, Florida, Toronto, Carolina, and maybe to a lesser extent, but in the mix, the Rangers, I think all five of those teams can represent the Eastern Conference. So that speaks to the level of talent in that. And it also is why there's such a lack of parity in that conference, right? These teams are so much better than the Detroits and Montreals and Ottawas. They beat them every time they play. You don't see that as much in the West.
But does that make – I still – despise how the NHL handles their playoff bracketing system.
It's the worst. Yeah, because 20 minutes on this right now. It's the worst playoff format.
I want to make it clear that it's absolutely batshit crazy that we are guaranteed to have at least one of Tampa, Toronto, and Florida not make it more than one round. It's a guarantee. It has to happen. That's bananas, and it makes no sense.
Of all the dumb forced rules in the playoff, one of the things that has completely botched the playoff format since they made the change is the forced 2-3 matchup within the division. And the reason why this is the base case and where all the problems manifest, so the trickle down effect becomes significant. Because the 2 seed must play the 3 seed in each division, as soon as you have an elite division or a weak division, you guarantee one of those two teams either is eliminated, to your point, or advances into the second round. I will never forget the first time. Well, I want to say it was the first time it happened. It was that Vancouver Calgary. I want to say 2014 playoff round. It was, I think, the first year of the forced 2-3. And I mean, these were like the 15th and 16th best teams in the playoffs. They're playing each other in the first round. It was. They have got – if the league is so adamant about playing out of the division, first off, I think that's a mistake. I think they should go at minimum back to 1-8 in the conference, and if not, they should go 1-16, quite frankly. That's what I would prefer. But if they have got to get out of the division, this whole force 2-3 with a floating wild card has made it so the first round is comically fair or unfair to a small number of teams every regular season. And again, I will bring this up, not just in the Eastern Conference, you're going to have Florida and Toronto and the Rangers and Pittsburgh playing in the first round. Go look out West. I mean, like, you're going to have right now, I think as it stands, you'd have LA, Vegas. I mean, these are teams 10 points off the trail of the Rangers and Pittsburgh, right? Yep. You got St. Louis, Minnesota, again, teams 10 points off trail. And I think St. Louis is a very good team. I think Vegas is a very good team. I don't think that's really in dispute. Both those teams are very good. Vegas had a ton of injuries. But, like, I could sit here all day long and say Vegas is a cup contender too, but they haven't earned the right to be like, well, thankfully we get to draw L.A. in the first round. It's like, well, what did Vegas do to draw L.A. in the first round that the Rangers or Pittsburgh have to draw the other team who's 10 points better in the standings? I mean, that part is asinine. It's always been asinine. There and barring a pure economics argument from the league, which I have never seen, because they think it's all rivalry driven. They are adamant that's where eyes go to TV sets. It's for rivalries and rivalries only. So for as long as that's the case, this is the playoff format that we have to deal with. I really do believe this is the lowest hanging fruit in the entirety of the league. This is the easiest thing to fix to improve the product, and they will not do it for whatever reason.
I do think 1 through 16 is kind of weird. I know, like, I get it. I know the NBA really hasn't done it yet either. But East and West just makes too much sense. Your case there is just too strong. It has to happen.
The only reason why I back off the one, first off, 116 is by far the most appropriate. I'll die on that hill all day long. The only reason why I'm willing to back up off that hill for a second is if you have massive conference imbalance and you've got these teams playing the lion's share of the games within their own division, because that's how the schedule's really borne out, then it makes sense that teams can rack up additional, you know, incremental points or not, depending on the strength of their schedule. But, like, at some point, like, these teams are playing – the Central is playing plenty of games against Pacific. The Atlantic's playing plenty of games against the Metro. We have a phenomenal understanding of the true talent of these teams. And yet, when come game 83, it's like, well, this is the way it is. This is the two plays the three. Was it a few years ago? I want to say it was 3-4 years ago. Tampa played Detroit also in the first round. And I think it was like a 91-point team versus a 92-point team. And in the other conference, you had two teams at 105 points. Playing in the first round. I mean, I don't know how the league or the Players Association, for that matter, is fine with that approach. I mean, otherwise, it's like, well, what's the point of the regular season? We're just trying to clinch a playoff spot in the division. And if that's the case, that's less of an incentive for the moderate or casual fan to watch the games, I think.
Well, go on, Greg. Sorry.
Oh, no. I'm good.
In this situation, you can kind of see it with the players on the ice, where, like, the Eastern Conference is locked up, and you can tell that certain players are just not going their full bore every single night. And I get it. Like, it's all locked up. I know that they're hockey players. They want to play for their team and et cetera, but it happens in the NBA too. You kind of, like, NBA players actually take nights off where the NHL do not. And these guys, but they do take nights off on the ice just a little bit. They won't be going the full 100%. You can tell. We watch these guys every single night, and it's just like, all right, well, the Eastern Conference is locked up. We're bound to play Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins no matter what we do. We have Igor back there. We're trying to win him the heart. Outside of that, not so much going on right now.
You listen, and I'll jump to an organization that I think is – I think it's the best – it's the most well-run organization in the league. And if it's not one, it's two, and it's Carolina, right? And I really don't think that's debatable anymore. I think 4 or 5 years ago people were saying, oh, but the goaltending, it's like – well, they're an absolutely dominant team, but it really does. Like, you can listen to Rod Brind'Amour and the rest of the Carolina Hurricanes front office, the way they think, the way they talk, the way they approach roster building, the way they approach games. And I look at a team like Carolina, and you watch some of the Carolina games in the last few weeks, and it's not the knock on them. It's like, they're not playing with the same pace they were in October. They're just not. And they're not going to play with that, you know, the pace that they're playing with now is not what you're going to see come late March and early April. And I have to imagine at some point, like, Rod Brind'Amour is maybe one of the more impressive people that's really re-entered the league, I should say, over the last few years. You can't tell me he's sitting there or in an effective way having his guys give it 110% every single night, knowing damn well that the only thing that they need to do right now is just lock up that one seed, which, quite frankly, they may be only 10 games away from. And then at that point, it's playing out the string, staying healthy. And by the way, like, on that, like, tangentially related, like, you see that with other teams, right? Like, wherever you stand on the Nikita Kucherov long-term injured reserve or the Mark Stone long-term injured reserve, and by the way, like, it should be noted, Vegas has been a worse team without Mark Stone in the lineup, surprise, like, it's hurt them, but, like, they're still managing the cap, right? That's the entire debate. It's like, we can get through this part of the season, come back game 83 when there's no cap, and really what you're saying is, we have enough talent to get by, so why don't you take a few extra games off? And if you're already saying that without poisoning the conversation, you're already conceding you're not putting your best effort forward. So I do think that there's some truth to that that really can't be argued against.
Travis, we are exactly 2 weeks away from the NHL trade deadline, and I have never been less certain of who the hell is actually going to get traded at this year's trade deadline. Can you enlighten me and tell me what we should actually reasonably expect over the next 14 days?
I'm going to be a good employee. I'm going to tell you to go to TSN's trade bait board because it is the most comprehensive trade bait board list you will find. And the way they compile this is twofold. One, it's the likelihood of the player being moved. And two, it's the quality of the player. I would say that, again, I'm too complimentary to you today. I got to come back. Next time I'm coming on, I'm being super pessimistic. But
fine,
you're right, and the reason why is simple. The cap is a disaster for, like, 80% of the teams in the league. And then you've got this weird tranche of teams who really should be doing everything they can to pass dead money contracts. I mean, Arizona, the Coyotes are basically a Ponzi scheme at this point, but you got teams like Ottawa, Seattle, you know, teams with tremendous flexibility with the cap just because of where they are right now. That should be really acting as third-party pass-throughs, but like you guys see it, the real economy's not great. The NHL's not doing great, and you know, at the attendance, and it is a box sport. Ratings aren't, you know, ripping hot, even though the new TV deal has been a bit of a boon in relative terms. It's created a dynamic where teams either don't have the cap space to get what they want, have marginal cap space, and can't acquire the big time player that's available on the trade market. I wrote about this about the Maple Leafs last week. They want to add a defenseman. It's like, okay, well, which defenseman is out there? Okay, Jacob Chychrun's been talked about for 5 months in Arizona. He's got, you know, I think 3 years left on his deal. He's a super young player. The Coyotes are going to want the world for him. Okay, we'll go down the list. Ben Chiarot, John Klingberg. I mean, Dallas, I find it very hard to see Dallas trading John Klingberg the way they're playing right now. Mark Giordano, 65 years old. Colin Miller's had a great season, but he's playing in Buffalo. And it's like, and he's carrying a decent sized cap hit. And it's like, okay, well, then not only which of the guy are you willing to throw assets at in your very limited cap space? On top of that, which player are you taking out of the lineup so that he improves this team? And I think you can find spots. I think you can find spots where a position is critically in need of improvement. The Edmonton Oilers goaltending situation is probably at the top of the list the way Mike Smith has played. I think that's what makes Alex Georgiev as a backup goalie in the Rangers from the Rangers. I think that's what makes him a very interesting trade candidate because there is a need and an appetite for a, you know, a 1B type platoon goaltender for a number of playoff teams, especially if the goalie carries a relatively small cap hit like he does. But like in terms of big names, could it be, I don't see Klingberg happening. Could it be Giroux? Maybe. Could it be Chychrun? I mean, they've had 4 months to trade him. Maybe that's a summer deal when teams have more flexibility and Arizona wants to continue whatever the hell they're doing. But I actually do wonder if this is going to be a bit of a muted trade deadline. It's really for this trade deadline to be wild, you know, in the usual, holy crap, that was, I can't believe it's 75, 80 trades. You're going to need these bottom feeder teams with cap space to act as pass-throughs and brokers. By the way, they should be doing that. But we've seen time and time again, some organizations are reticent to do it. So it remains to be seen.
The Rangers might actually be the people that save this trade deadline. As you might know,
Can I say the one player I would go get right now?
You should.
Thomas Hertl. No, I wouldn't even think twice about it. Tomas Hertl reminds me verbatim of Mark Stone in his last two seasons in Ottawa. An insanely talented player that everyone knows is insanely talented, who's had muted production only in relative terms because the rest of the team around him has been junk. I mean, it is you can draw a direct line between where Stone was and his talent level and Hertl and his talent level. He's an incredible playmaker. He can fit in any team's top six in the NHL. I know he's got a decent sized contract, which makes him difficult, but if there is one guy I want to go after and I know he is going to dramatically improve my team, he is at the top of the list. He's number one for me.
See, the Rangers, I would think would love to do that, but I don't know, because their cap is $32 million right now. They'd love to fit everybody onto there. I think they need to get three or four guys. They could fit Hertl, no problem. He could be a rental, and that's fine. I don't think Chris Drury wants to sell off all the farm to get a one-year rental just to go in this year. Should he? Maybe. I mean, we're talking Igor Shesterkin and Adam Fox and Artemi Panarin. It's pretty good right now. Things are good. But I have a slight feeling he doesn't want to do that. But if he did, he couldn't re-sign him. That's the other issue, is that because the Rangers automatically go into cap hell starting next year for many, many years to come, no matter what. They have a lot of guys to pay, yep. Keandre Miller, Lafreniere, and also they have to pay Ryan Strome if they want to. And Ryan Strome's probably going to have to try and accept a $4.5 or a $5 million contract if he wants to stay, or at least that's what the Rangers are going to tell him. And guess what? He's probably not going to do that either, and he's a backbone of this team. So I think that's the player they should go get. The real player we've been talking about, especially Greg, for a really long time here is Pavelski, but the Dallas Stars are too hot right now and they're going to probably extend him.
I'm going to give you a scary thought here. You know what team can get Tomas Hertl? Colorado Avalanche.
Hate that.
We have been talking for like 2-3 years now about, like, everyone acknowledges the Avalanche are a top five team in the league. They're the best team in the Western Conference. I know Vegas, when healthy, can give them a match, but I think Colorado's number one. They may be the best team in the league when they're hot, right? And kind of a weird couple playoff exits, but we have acknowledged for quite some time now that this is an elite team. We have stopped talking as much about the just ridiculous amount of cap space and roster building effort that's been done down there. They could easily bring him into the lineup. And I cannot, honestly, with his acquisition, his add into that lineup, I think they become the Cup favorite. I really do. And you know, if you set aside their early goaltending woes, I mean, they have just been just destroying teams for 2/3 of the season now. So that would be one where I would say, one, it's a fascinating idea. Two, it will cost the Avs a small fortune. But three, if they did it, ooh, talk about an all-in move to kind of, you know, it's pretty rare you get an odds-on type favorite in the NHL. I think Colorado would move into that spot with that type of ad.
Travis, not as sexy of a name, but a name that Ryan and I have talked about probably once an episode since October. Explain to me why everybody hates Phil Kessel.
There were no good reasons about 7 to 10 years ago. So the problem with Kessel is the way he played 5, 7, 9 years ago lend itself to criticism, stupid criticism, anytime he didn't score a goal on a given night, right? It was like, half-assed effort, he's lazy, he's not a great defense player. By the way, he wasn't a great defense player, that's true. But I always thought the criticisms of him were so overblown because it's like, you guys are talking about a top 5 percentile scorer in the league and you want him back-checking like Patrice Bergeron. Not everyone's Patrice Bergeron. He's a phenomenal high-end attacker. I still think he adds some degree of value. However, I will say, it has been much easier to marginalize him out of games in the past couple of seasons. I think some of that is the talent he's been playing with. Certainly was the case in Arizona. But on the other hand, I think what was said, I don't want to call it a self-fulfilling prophecy, but it's almost like the arguments that were made about Kessel, which were wrong at the time, were invariably going to be right as he got older. And I think that's what you're seeing now, right? You're talking about an older player who is a massive speed weapon, you know, in his prime, and still is a relatively fast skater. He's also going to be 35 in October, right? So that's the sort of stuff that you're like, okay, maybe it's a low-risk ad, and I think low-risk ads are brilliant, the type move that you want to make at the trade deadline because you're not going to handcuff yourself if it doesn't work. On the other hand, the upshot on getting a player like this can be valuable, right? Especially as a secondary option. So I think he's an interesting candidate. On the other hand, I do think what was said about him incorrectly 5, 6, 7 years ago about, you know, how weak his net results would be because of his defensive play and his inability to, you know, attack the puck when he's playing away from it, his inability to play physical on the boards. But right, wrong, or otherwise, and however valuable he was back in the Toronto days and even the late stages Toronto days and even in his Pittsburgh days, I think you're seeing a little bit of that actually creep into his game, but I think that's born because he's 34 years old, soon to be 35. And that's just something that teams are going to have to weigh when they're talking about him.
But like for a third round pick, and the Rangers bottom six is literally just a pile of trash. Like that's just what's going on right now. That's an amazing value in my opinion.
No, it's amazing value, but I think the Kessel argument, right? I think if I were a GM, Kessel is the exact type of low risk ad I would go after if I had a playmaking center I could put him with. And the reason why I say that is Kessel is a feed type player. Another guy he reminds me of kind of where he's at in his career right now is Mike Hoffman, right? Mike Hoffman is, I'll call him one-dimensional, right? An incredible shooter, very agile, and a strong attacker, but doesn't really give you anything much else. Not to marginalize him, that's just the player he is. I kind of see Kessel in the same light. When players like Hoffman and Kessel, he's Patrick Laine. I mean, Patrick Laine's in his prime. It's a much bigger, you know, much heavier baseline. But it's the same thing, right? When you see that guy playing with a playmaker, someone who's creative, someone who can open up space, someone who can open up shooting lanes for a player like Phil Kessel and his ridiculous wrist shot still today at the age of 34, then that starts to make a lot more sense. If you bury Kessel on a weak line, and say, well, he's Phil Kessel, he's still a decent player, what can he do? I think the point I would make back to that is, well, we've kind of seen that, right? And the results haven't been great. And that's fine, right? I think the billion-dollar general manager makes $1 billion because he understands how skill sets complement one another, and he doesn't try and force-fit pieces just because he thinks it's a smart buy or a value-add type situation where a team's trying to, you know, a team's cap stressed or, you know, whatever the case ends up being. I think the math of it is a great general manager knows how to put the pieces together, as does a coach. And to me, that's the operative question, not just for the Rangers, but for anyone else, is who's the playmaking center they can put them with? And do you have confidence in a third line, you know, maybe second power play type position that he can deliver? I think at the cost of a third, fourth round pick, I think that's worth considering for sure.
All right, riddle me this one before you make your exit stage left here, Travis. Don't tell me what you think the Rangers should do, because I think you're in line similarly to how Ryan and I are thinking. Tell me what you actually believe the Rangers will do at this year's deadline.
What I actually believe they will do at the deadline. I think they're going to be relatively quiet. And for really the one reason that was mentioned earlier, I think the cap situation becomes significantly more hairy starting this summer, really. That's number one. Number two, I think you have a relatively young core that the team is building off of with just a white hot goaltender. And if you're looking at it from the Rangers perspective, they have become a very, very top heavy team. And that can be a good thing. That can be a bad thing. We know great top heavy teams. We know ugly top heavy teams. When you're top heavy though, the one thing it precludes you from doing is being able to swap out as aggressively anyway, you know, quality third, fourth line type players, prospects who are, you know, trying to fight for ice time and they can't really realize it quite yet. That's really not so much where the Rangers are right now. And I think what you're going to end up seeing is them adding relatively little on the cap side. I wonder if the Rangers and a number of other teams for that matter do look for one type add on the blue line. You know, most teams are going to be in the market for a second, you know, air quotes, second pairing guy, because who isn't when you're a playoff contender? But Justin Braun's an interesting name. I mean, I know he's on the, you know, the very tail end of his career, but when you're talking about a guy making less than $2 million, who's still somewhat effective in his role, he would be a good depth add, you know, at least to give something to the Rangers beyond their first two pairings. That would be something where you can add a little bit of value to the back end. And by the way, as I'm saying this, I realize how lame it sounds. I want to say it's Jacob Chychrun. I want to say it's Hampus Lindholm. I just don't see that happening. And that's, you know, for most teams for that matter, not just the Rangers. So I think you're going to see a quiet trade deadline, maybe a depth add on the blue line. But beyond that, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how much is out there and how aggressively the Rangers are going to pursue it, considering where the cap's going to go right now.
I hope you're wrong. But Travis, I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on tonight, man. Anything you want to plug before
anytime.
We get out of here?
No. The only other thing I would say, I'll give you one other name in the forward ranks. Nick Paul in Ottawa, another relatively cheap player, but a very useful one.
You just haven't said JT Miller at all, Travis.
I have not said JT Miller, because I don't see that happening, specifically because of the reasons that the price that Vancouver's asking for
is insane.
For JT Miller is a bit eyebrow raising, whereas I think Nick Paul can be had for a mid-round pick. And when you said it best, the bottom six is trash. If I can get an effective player on my third line at, you know, $1.5 million, and to me Nick Paul would be a better ad than a player like Justin Broadwood. You're just creating redundancy, right? And so for the Rangers going into the playoffs, it can't be kill or be killed, right? It can't be the top six kills and the bottom six is be killed. It's got to be kill and sustain, stay alive, survive, right? That's what we've seen from every cup contender really in the modern era, is the bottom six, the second and third pairings, they don't get killed, right? They're fighting for break even, and the big guns are winning their battles. And the Rangers aren't there yet. I mean, they just aren't. Few teams are. So I think an effort to improve really the depth side of things for the Rangers is what you're going to end up seeing at the deadline.
Travis, you're the best, man. Thanks so much.
Anytime, guys. Be easy.
Appreciate it, bud. All right, and as always, I want to take the time at the end of the show to thank our NHL Insiders Club. It's been a great time. It's been a blast talking to all of you, as always. One of my favorite chats in the world. And we all prop each other up, and I'm going to congratulate some people on today's episode. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Curtulo, Adam Skeech, Alex Gartner, Amber Cohensberger, Austin Beetleman, Barbie Chris, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Brett McGinnis, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Broadway Blue Shirt Bleeder, Chris Finelli, CJ Stellwagen, Daniel Dezen, David Naradin, David Siegel, Dennis Deitz, Darian, Eric says Binghamton isn't that bad, Greg. Elmira, though? I don't know. Did I say that wrong? Eric's going to kill me. Eric Stagg, give Gartner a cup. Gretzky, Gareth McFly, Handel, Harrison Hasco, Hip Hop 489, Ian Rodriguez, Jake Berkowitz, Jerry Marquez, JD, Jimmy Mack, John Hardesty, Jordan, Justin Friedman, Justin Starr, Christopher Florida, Christoph Berg, Laser Gronkowski, Lou Giordano, Lucas K, Matthew Kine, congratulations! Max Nielsen, Mike Bucklaw, Neil Grover, Pascal Perriere, Pavel Kodjarev, thank you, Pavel, Randy Tesser, Stephen Lohmeyer, and then, of course, Stieg Bubach, Swinegard, The Drop PK, Thomas Weish? Is it Welsh? It's Welsh. I'm sorry, that's not an I. Tommy Sicleri, Tom Hertz Jr., the legend, Tommy O'Neill, Tori Manhattan, the original OG supporter, Upstate Vin, Vinny Bracco, Vinny Hay, Will Spector, and Winston, the Golden Retriever! Always fun saying that last one. I want to do a quick monologue real quick. That's how quick monologues work, in case you were wondering, about Adam Fox and Ryan Lindgren. And what I was thinking about both these players is the last couple weeks, as you've watched both of them, kind of go back and forth. This is a pair that's been dependable. That's been really, I don't want to say the rock of this team, but they've been consistent every single night. And Adam Fox, as you know, won the Norris, is a tremendous player, going to be up in the rafters, etc. But since his injury, things have looked a little bit off. They've looked a little strange. And I do want to say, and this isn't taking away anything from Fox, I do think the Rangers have locked up a playoff spot. I do think he's not pushing himself the way he usually is. His game seems a step slow. He seems like he's still recovering from some injuries. But Ryan Lindgren, in general, has worried me just a little bit. Talk about this with a couple of my friends very often. It's just Lindgren looks just a smidge off. I know he's blocked shots. I know he does everything right. I know he's the grit and toughness. I love the guy. He's bleeding all over the ice for the New York Rangers constantly. Don't get me wrong. I love him. But when it comes to Ryan Lindgren, his game just looks a little off, a little stale. And it could be just the long doldrums of this season. It's hard to remember that these players haven't had full 82 games. They've had two shortened seasons before this. And Ryan Lindgren is just part of that. This is a different marathon sprint for a player like him who's never had to do this level of NHL play and this kind of schedule. And I wonder if it's just Fox and Lindgren adapting to that. I'm sure they're banged up a little bit. I'm sure there's injuries, and I'm sure they're pushing through it. But how do you as a player get to the playoffs and be fresh while also playing 31 games in 60 days? It's a stupid question, but it's what the Rangers have to do. How do you get to the playoffs versus the Pittsburgh Penguins and be fresh to play while also maintaining your point lead? And I think that's what Fox and Lindgren are doing right now. And there's just something to watch. Just watch the chemistry. I know Fox still has the points going on, but there's just, you guys all watch Adam Fox. He's a wizard. He's a magical person out there. And there's just been times where he's looked just a slight bit off over the past couple of days. Maybe I'm wrong. Listen, I could be overreacting. It's my job to break this stuff down, to analyze it, to make these observations. I'm not criticizing Adam. I'm not criticizing Ryan. I think they're both great players. They're wonderful. I love them, etc. But in this time, it's just something to watch. Just something to keep your eyes on. And also watch for what teams try to do to Igor. I'm so fascinated by when you have a player like Igor Shesterkin in net. He's clearly a hard candidate who's already won the Vezina. It's already locked up. What do teams try and do to beat him? And I know there's a big argument online about what people could do, but in my eyes, they try and go high. You saw that with St. Louis. I know it was a fluke. There was three times in a row. Totally understand. But you saw the Devils try and do it too. You saw the Jets try and do it. They try and go high glove side. And that's hard to do. It's not easy. But I just look for where teams are going to try and shoot against Igor to try and break him down. He's not going to let them. He'll adjust. He's Igor Shesterkin. But it is an interesting subplot. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. We got a BSBOT coming Wednesday afternoon. We love you guys. We'll see you then. Bye.